All right, everyone, grab your gear and leave your fear. We're here for Goku.
Dragon Ball. Gotta find that Dragon Ball. Don't stop until you've got them all. The seven magic balls. It's all you gotta do to have your wish come true. Get that Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball. The greatest test of all is to find that seventh ball.
Hello, friends. Grab your gear and lose your fear. It's Destructo Discourse Origins. I'm your host, Jason, and joining me on the discourse this week is Theo.
First order of business will be to rule this planet.
And Tyler.
How dare you, Jason? You took my favorite one.
No, did I take it?
I'll go with my backup.
I'm sorry.
Who's laughing, oink boy?
Certainly not me. There's egg right on my face.
Who's oinking, laugh boy?
that feels strange. like calling someone laugh boy is like an alien trying to insult a human.
Yeah. Humor being.
Humor being. Son of a bitch.
Joke organism.
This is a Dragon Ball original style rewatch podcast. I forgot to mention that at the top, but if you're just joining us now, that's a very confusing way to go about podcasts, but I respect the hustle.
Sometimes you just want to jump right in the deep end of something.
Godspeed.
You know, get your bearings mid-swim.
We are covering episodes 67, 68, and 69, the original Dragon Ball anime, and the very end of the Red Ribbon Saga. How are we all feeling?
We made it.
It's really long, and it's even longer when you're recording once every other week.
Yeah.
With filler.
You know, looking back, it was quite a journey.
It was quite a romp.
I'm really surprised Goku stayed focused this long.
And he's still doing it.
He used his brain.
Yeah, like it's like I can see him being like, "Oh, I got to get the next Dragon Ball next." But like he remembered Upa and Upa's dad.
He remembered why
that matters to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really surprised.
I'm proud of our boy. Before we get into it, Theo, what was that question you wanted to pose to the group chat?
Oh, the one that was a bummer?
Potentially. Doesn't have to be.
What's a time that you would have done so much better if you were in charge? Or thought you would have. Mm-hmm.
The thought you would is the linchpin to this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, low key, there were a bunch of instances when I was first starting out at work at my current job that where I was just very met with like a, I'll just do it. Just let me do it. Because mm-hmm. I'm also a bit of a perfectionist. or definitely less so than I used to be, but I was very of the school of, let me do it, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this isn't a bummer, but watching... Way back, watching Dave DM Dragon Ball Dungeons and Dragons, gave me not a sense of I could do this better, but like the inspiration to set off on my own,
do your own, thing.
Start DMing. Yeah,
I mean that's kind and of then, my so like, answer also, but not
the
for,
positive version.
Yeah,
of the question,
not for for. Doing D&D, but listening to podcasts and being like, I could do a podcast. This isn't so hard.
You know, honestly, that's kind of what got me into hosting and editing this show, was listening back to regular Destructo Discourse, and I'm like, I could probably make this kind of match.
Give it a shot.
Give it a shot, and then have it kind of become its own thing.
And
you and Tyler both have feet and wear shoes. step into those.
And what a ride it has been since, Jason.
Oh boy. We've had buckets, we've had GT.
A grand tour. I had an answer to sort of the original question where, like, in high school, in the marching band, when I was second trumpet, I was filled with ambition and rage.
Second trumpet?
Of, like, how I could, instead of just making fun of, you know, the little baby eighth graders joining up in the marching band and how bad they were, like, how to actually, you know, help them get better. And by God, when I was section leader, I did a great job and I threw a pizza party for my team after they got so many compliments from the band leader.
Yeah, that's so sweet. I think you're a really good leader.
Thanks! But, like, to go off of you guys' interpretation of the question, I had an experience like that I haven't followed through on, where I went and saw a local movie, like, made by local people and kind of shown in a local movie theater.
Like an indie film?
Really?
An indie film. Yep, it was the weirdest, grossest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, is that that's that one that, like, I remember you telling me about, but I don't know exactly what it was.
Yeah, it was a lot. I don't even remember what it was called. The short story was based on, Prepare for Cuss Words. It was called, Shit Fucked, Vile Love Story by Hannah something. I forget. But yeah, but it kind of opened my eyes of like, oh, I can just do shit. I can just do art.
You can just
and
do
make
shit.
It. And it can be weird and gross and make no sense. And it can, So, someday, prepare.
I do love the feeling of you can just do it. You can just do it yourself.
I'm just gonna do it.
Yeah. If anything happens, it will be in the form of bad fan fiction or actual attempted poetry. But
hey, I mean, this is one of many calls to action that I feel like us at various points in time will always make. But go make your thing, people at home.
Go make your thing. Tell your story.
There is some wild art out there, and there's a lot of schlock out there getting high accolades, but who cares? Go make your thing. Did you see the last couple Twilight movies? Go make your thing. That being said, let's go make this episode of Destructive Discourse.
Yeah!
Let's go make the thing. Episode 67 of the original Dragon Ball anime is The End of Commander Red.
The Japanese title roughly translates to Commander Red Dies!
Fucking spoilers.
Is that it?
That's it.
Episode 68 is... No. We open right in on the action with Goku sprinting through hails of gunfire, knocking out guards, and he even takes a bazooka to the face.
It's fine.
I mean, that's just a big gun, really.
One of the guys with the bazooka is like a rabbit guard, but the dub made it sound like he was a goat.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was my backup quote.
That was a choice.
Can I get everyone's your best he's toast real quick?
He's toast.
He's toast.
He's toast.
He's toast.
Very good.
Goats don't even like toast. Well, they probably do. but they can't toast things.
That's true. Red is at his wit's end, berating Staff Officer Black for not training his men properly. Goku's radar shows the Dragon Balls as directly above him. He attempts to Son Goku headbutt through to the next floor, but his noggin clangs against the hard ceiling.
An anti-Son Goku ceiling!
They came prepared for once.
It's made of kachin.
Extra for those.
It's made of kachin.
Why? Why? Is this a thing that happens?
Why this one floor too? Because he punched his way up through on previous floors.
Maybe they had this like as a door somewhere else and just really quickly installed it. Hmm? But even then, like you should have been able to like blast, you know, the hard bit through the normal floor bits.
Mm-hmm. Red gloats that the ceiling is made of a special alloy as he searches the camera feeds for at least one soldier who can finish off Goku. He focuses in on one Colonel Violet, whom he falsely believes is dependable and loyal.
Sir, have you read her personnel file?
Have you met mm-hmm. this woman?
Red notices that Violet is not actually going after Goku, but is instead going for the vault with all their money.
He's like, no, you idiot, he's not in that room.
What a goofball. Red
Stomach
tries to
head... turned around.
Thank Violet. He tries to head out to confront Violet, despite Black's continued warnings. Back down in the vault, Colonel Violet is here to rob armies and chew bubblegum. And yeah. She has just used up her gum.
To stick an explosive to the safe.
Yes. She plants a tiny bomb on the wad of gum and blasts the vault wide open.
She's a cool
lady.
Now
that's an effective use for bazooka. Bazooka bubblegum.
Oh, god damn it. Violet procures a capsule plane and starts to load it up with treasure. Consider this my severance package, she says, winking to the camera. Queen shit. Queen shit.
I'm so I shouldn't be confused by Red anymore, but he's so worried about this treasure, and it's like, dude, you just get the Dragon Balls and wish for more treasure.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that was given, what he was after.
That's true, that's true, yeah.
Mm. Stay tuned, kids. There's a twist coming. Violet, my queen, zooms away, leaving a fluttering trail of loose banknotes in her wake.
Honey, you gotta secure those.
I know, get some tarp, get some cables
get a rubber
or paracord. Right!
Weigh it down with one of those little dashboard hula dancers. I don't know.
It's a hula dancer, but it's just like, it's a red ribbon hula dancer, like a branded.
Instead of a hula skirt, it's all red ribbons.
Ooh, stylish. Staff Officer Black has even better news. All the Red Ribbon soldiers appear to be evacuating. Black orders all the soldiers to return to their posts over the PA system, but to no avail.
Not a lot of sway left.
No.
They're like, either this kid is gonna kill me, or these guys who are appear to be less capable will kill me.
Will be mad at me.
I'm gonna take my chances.
Goodbye. Black suggests that they retreat, and Red decides to take him up on that offer. ... leaving Black alone to fight Goku. Red escapes into what I call on my notes a little Wonka-Vader thing, yeah. Which rises into the room above, just as Goku busts in through the window.
That doesn't seem more secure.
It does not, but it is out of the way. He like has the Dragon Balls like wrapped up in a little hanky.
Mm-hmm. Well, gotta keep him safe.
Mm-hmm. Goku doesn't want to fight, he just wants the Dragon Balls, but Black is loyal to a fault, taking off his suit jacket and getting ready to rumble.
This was really cool to look at, like, just him, like, taking off the jacket and, like, rolling up his sleeves. I just thought that was a really cool detail.
Yeah, and he looks cool with the suit jacket gone.
Yeah.
It looks like he's dressed for business, because he's got, like, these little, like, red ribbon branded, what do you call them?
Armbands?
Yeah, kind of like armbands, but, like, kind of like, they look more like garter belts for arms. There's probably a smart way to say that. Arm garters, that's what they're called. Okay. I was like, I know I'm onto something with this. So the fight begins. Black seems to be able to hold his own against Goku. Red is watching from his little pod via screens and starts to hit some switches. The ceiling of the room Goku and Black are in starts to rotate, Black is distracted by this just long enough for Goku to land a blow to his stomach and sending him hurtling out the window. Well, hurtling towards the window, we'll say. We don't see him exit.
Commander Red, you are bad at your job.
Quite bad, because here's...
We know Goku is not going to get squished. This is we've seen Goku versus ceiling, and Goku wins. The only person this will be effective against is your own dude.
Mm-hmm. So, the ceiling of the room changes from a domed to a domed shape to a flat shape, and it presses down in an attempt to crush Goku, and the entire room is pressed flat as Commander Red appears from his little pod and gloats. Black, meanwhile, is dangling from the outside, holding onto the window frame for dear life, and cursing Red for betraying him.
My dude, I don't know why you're surprised.
Mm-hmm.
He has not shown one smidgen of respect for you this whole time.
And you were the closest to him this whole time.
Yeah. Like, you've seen how he treats people he perceives as below him, and your height will not save you.
Oh, it definitely won't. After commercial, Red continues to laugh, gleeful at defeating Goku and being just one Dragon Ball away from his ultimate goal, to summon the dragon and wish to be taller.
As tall as a mountain, he says.
He says he wants to be as tall as a mountain so that no one will ever be able to look down on him again.
This is what we've been doing this whole time.
The impotent rage of a short king is the driving force behind this whole debacle.
Man, if only he would realize the power he has, because when you're, you know, if you're below somebody, you can, you know, gain their trust and then throw them off balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's way easier to knock somebody over that way.
There's probably surgery to get taller in the dragon world. Or robots. Surgery robots. Who knows?
Leg extenders.
Also, you can maybe just be friends with Goku and whatnot and say, like, hey, I want this so I can get taller. Can you help me get the Dragon Balls?
Yeah, or like, I don't know, go to wherever Bar's from and rule over them.
True. In the land of the two-footers, the four-foot man is king. That's how that saying goes.
Uh-huh.
Black emerges, confronting Commander Red. That was your wish, really? Black is totally flabbergasted that Red would waste so much time, money, and soldiers' lives just to be a little bit taller.
To be fair, he wants to be as tall as a mountain. That's quite a bit taller.
That is a bit taller, that's true. Red blows up at Black, berating him and calling him a small-time nobody, while we see, like, a slow zoom in on Black's face. Black retorts in kind by taking out a pistol and blasting Red between the eyes.
Finally.
Whoa.
Oops. That was kind of quick. Okay.
That was... Oh, man, that surprised me. This was hard-boiled.
I was not expecting that. Yeah, for sure.
Like, dang, this is such an interesting character. I wish he had a better design.
Yeah. That's like, kind of the only bad thing about Commander Black is the way that he looks.
Yeah. Like, and wasn't there a redesign at one point that, like, then they went back on?
They redesigned him for Path to Power, which is like the retelling of it in the GT style.
During the GT era, they did a like TV movie that is just a rehashing of early Dragon Ball stories.
Oh, he looks cool as heck.
Yeah, it's actually a good redesign too.
I like it. It's got like a Freddie Prinze Jr. kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it has that like the face of somebody who like is like a long suffering person who's like, you know, there because he seems like a real square who, like, has ideals. Like, not good ideals, but, like, this is the way it's done, and I'm gonna follow through because we have a plan. And then, like, he seems like somebody who would shoot his boss like this, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
They should have kept it.
They should have. But they reverted to, well, rather, anytime he shows up in things like the Gacha games, they use his Dragon Ball design. Maybe because it's like more recognizable at a glance than the GT design. Sure,
can't guarantee that everyone watched that GT movie.
But still.
But still, like, come on, guys.
80s anime moment for sure. Mm-hmm. All goes quiet as the Dragon Balls slowly roll across the floor to Black's feet. And Black picks them up, vowing to use them to fulfill the Red Ribbon Army to its greatest potential and rule the world.
There we go.
Now we're talking.
And this is where you start to get an idea of, like, oh, here's somebody who, like, is definitely potentially more capable than the boss, but
right,
maybe hasn't thought it all through yet.
I mean, I had a feeling there was going to be a betrayal like this, because it's giving me very, like, the Emperor and the Grand Vizier, uh-huh. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of, the advisor closest to the man in power who's ready to do a traitor. But it didn't quite, like, envelop, it didn't quite unfold in the way I expected.
Yeah, because it's pretty clear he wasn't planning on doing a traitor.
Yeah.
He was betrayed, and... responded in kind.
It was a reaction to figuring out what his life's work has amounted to.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this premature celebration is interrupted as the floor begins to rumble, and crawling out from the edge of the presser floor, it's Goku.
Hey, it's ya boy.
It's ya boy. Officer Black starts rolling deception after deception, trying to get Goku on his side.
Listen, here's a short king with more power than him. He knows how to handle this.
He's seen this pattern before.
Uh-huh.
As Black puts it, he is a victim of this whole scheme, just like Goku. He confronted and defeated Red for trying to kill Goku, and Red isn't so much dead as he is sleeping off a bad headache over there.
Ooh, but that was the step too far, bud.
Yeesh.
Goku knows dead people.
he knows what the dead look like.
Uh-huh. He has a bullet hole in his head.
Yep. Black does not want to give up the Dragon Balls, however, stating that the commander will miss them when he wakes up, and he offers to help Goku collect the rest of them. Black claims that the Red Ribbon Army only wants to see the Dragon Balls reunited, because Commander Red loves dragons, and loves Goku dragons. Can have the wish. But he's just a big. He's a scaly, that one.
I mean, I can see it, but so also
he built an army.
Mm-hmm. This deception roll finally fails as Goku rushes in amidst gunfire.
Yeah, the key to a good lie is small lies.
Small lies.
Only like one or two of them. Don't keep laying them on.
He was just weaving a tapestry right there.
You do not have enough fingers to hold all these threads, bud.
Mm-mm. Goku lands another blow to Black's guts as he drops the Dragon Balls. But the battle is not over yet, as Black tosses down a Red Ribbon capsule and summons a robot. It's this cool-looking design with, like, long arms and, like, sort of like a pot belly kind mm-hmm. of a look. And, like, a glass dome cockpit.
He says something about, like, Goku being, like, a machine, and then that gives him an idea.
It's like, oh, wait a minute. I know what a machine is.
I've got one of those.
And it's not named in the show, but this is called the Battle Jacket.
Ooh.
Which is cool. Yeah. I like it. So Black hops into the cockpit and gets the robot to boff Goku into a nearby wall. Meanwhile, Yamcha and the gang continue their flight path.
They're on their way.
They're making their way downtown. They're not feeling confident about this, but at least they have Master Roshi and Yamcha there to help, right?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. This half-cocked pep talk is interrupted by Launch waving her gun around and telling everyone to shut up.
I love Launch.
And time for one of my favorite comedies of error.
Extremely good.
Yamcha picks
shit ever.
It's so dumb. It's so good. It does nothing. It ends with nothing. It is complete filler. It is hilarious.
Here's what it does. It solidifies what will continue to be true for this group, which is they're just like a D&D party on their
They
way
really
to
are. So Yamcha picks up on the radar that a plane is closing in on them, and we cut to Violet in said plane, wanting to avoid confrontation. So, Tyler, to use a metaphor we both would understand, this is two sloops in Sea of Thieves trying to figure out what the vibe is.
Trying to vibe check each other.
Yeah. Both of them independently decide to descend low to the ground to stay out of sight. Whoopsie. Before both ascending to hide in the clouds. Double whoops.
Oops.
Oh, they must have the amazing technology to track me all this way.
They're matching me move for move.
They're anticipating my every move.
And they're both getting freaked out by what the other is doing.
Oh, they know we're here.
Looking at a mirror. It's so good.
It's two people coming towards each other in the aisle, and they're both matching each other in direction to get out of the way of the other. And it's just very awkward. I call a sequence follows, which I put on my notes as an anti-dog fight.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a dog fight looking in a mirror.
The two crafts dip and duck and loop around to avoid each other, but wind up matching each other perfectly. And just when they think they've lost each other in the clouds, they nearly collide in midair, scraping the paint by scant inches and speeding off from each other.
The wow. end.
The end.
then they both just kind of go, like, they don't pull over, they don't exchange insurance information.
They don't, no. Well, you know what? I think Violet's might not be insured.
Probably not. She'd say that's a racket.
On second thought, probably neither is Bulma's.
No, she'll just build another one.
Yeah, Bulma's like, what insurance? I made this. What are you fucking talking about?
I'm the richest person on this planet.
Back with Goku, Officer Black blasts him with the battle jacket before picking him up and hurtling him out of the tower. Goku lands on the ground dazed, where Black gives chase, hovering above him and pointing his blaster arm at him, and leaving us with a cliffhanger, because that's where episode 67 ends. Any final thoughts?
Good riddance, Commander Red.
Bye, rest in piss.
More like Commander Dead.
I thought when I started this episode, because I didn't watch the episodes for the last time, I just skipped ahead. So I don't know if this has been the case already, but like, I thought that he had just given up on the accent at this point.
You would think,
but it comes and goes.
It had a last minute 11th hour.
Appearance. We're back.
One woman show, one night only. It's like, Commander Red's accent,
like the fogs on the Scottish cliffs.
Ah, the moors. Episode 68, almost nice, is The Last Dragon Ball.
The Japanese title roughly... Wait, it doesn't say what it roughly translates to.
Is it just the same?
Okay, well, it says Saigo no Dragon Ball, so let me Google what that means.
I think that's The Last Dragon Ball.
Yeah, it might just be the same.
Yep, Last Dragon Ball.
Last one.
Well,
last call for Dragon Balls.
Oh my gosh, this was aired on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, several years before I was born.
A harbinger.
Yes, an omen.
Can you... Wait, this is an important question. If you're a time traveler and you travel to the past, can you still legally celebrate your birthday if it's for a year before you were born?
I mean, you exist.
I mean, sure, but you didn't exist yet. What I mean to say is, like, can I go to, like, can I go back into the 80s and 70s and still, like, claim all those, like, get a free brownie on your birthday, you know, points?
Who's gonna check?
Yeah.
Who's gonna stop me?
Yeah, who's gonna stop you? I was gonna ask, is there an illegal way to celebrate a birthday? But we could probably think of a few.
So many. Very, very many.
So many.
Tyler, there are so many laws.
I was intrigued by you invoking legality to celebrating a birthday, Jason.
Sorry. Objection!
Is it legal to celebrate my birthday if I've not been born yet?
I mean, I guess you'd have to celebrate the day you time-traveled into that period, because that's the day that you entered the universe.
It's the day that you exist.
Right, yeah.
Ooh,
it's getting complicated now.
Although, yeah, now it's getting complicated, because then it's like,
now I'm getting a headache.
When do you start to exist, you know, in the regular development, like...
Oh boy.
You know, do you have to wait like 9 months after you did your time travel, and then that's the birthday you celebrate?
I am not waiting that long for cake, I'm sorry. It's not happening. Let's get back to Yamcha's road trip.
Okay.
Because we open up in 68 with Yamcha and company flying towards Goku and bickering.
What else?
I love this so much.
Launch does not want to be part of this Greek chorus one bit, and she threatens to shoot the next person to say another word.
God bless.
I started to write that down on my quotes list, and then I was like, this is going to be too aggressive to start the show with. I'm just going to erase this one.
It would have been like an hour and a half of silence.
Tyler sneezed and now we've got Blyler.
Back at Red Ribbon, we cut to a slow montage of all the carnage and ruin as the Red Ribbon radar pings six Dragon Balls at the location of the battle. We cut to said battle as Staff Officer Black readies a hand laser from his Metal Gear.
Excuse you, it's Commander Black.
Commander Black, that's right. He just got a promotion, funny enough. Black blasts Goku, leaving behind a smoking crater. Various Red Ribbon soldiers creep out of hiding to survey the damage and cheer for victory, while the camera pans away to find that Goku is not, in fact, dead at the bottom of a smoking crater, but is instead up above, spying from the rooftops.
Habeas corpus.
Habeas Goku.
Uh-huh. Never, if there's smoke, there is not victory.
Goku leaps from above onto the cockpit of the battle jacket, sticking his tongue out.
Oh, just full Monkey King mode.
Mm-hmm. Black tries to punch him, but winds up donking himself on the noggin, shattering the cockpit. Whoopsie.
Why you hitting yourself?
Yeah! Black soars high above and prepares to launch something from the backpack of the battle jacket. And oh, it's a big missile. Oh, it's pointed at the Red Ribbon compound.
Oh, that's weird. Why are you turning upside down?
The soldiers go, he's not... No.
Is this the first time somebody points a gun at Earth?
I'll count this as aiming a gun at the planet, for sure.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't have
probably
destroyed...
Probably
couldn't
take out the planet, but...
No.
But like...
But it is... Definitely a gun.
It'll do some damage.
It's a proto of the trope.
Yeah. Black launches the missile. Goku leaps up and parries it, although it does give his foot an ouchie. The missile goes soaring back up towards Black, missing it by mere inches and exploding off in the mountains. Said explosion rattles Yamcha's plane. And it is here that we found out that Oolong brought flowers to this fight because, as he puts it, it's not a battle, it's a funeral.
Jesus, Oolong, what the fuck?
Oof.
What TV show do you think you're in?
Jesus. Roshi attempts to use this turbulence to cop a feel on Bulma and launch, but gets slapped and threatened at gunpoint in retaliation, respectively. So, good stuff.
He never learns.
He never does. Black attempts to flee the battle, but Goku is not having it. He uses the antenna atop one of the spires to springboard himself through the sky, flinging himself up to the battle jacket. And he sticks out his arms like Superman and punches through the robot.
This is cool. It should not have worked, but it's cool. Because he springs
cool.
himself from the bottom of the antenna.
He does, yeah. The robot starts to smoke and spark while Black frantically looks for an eject switch, and finding none, perishes as the battle jacket explodes.
See, this is what happens when you operate heavy machinery without fully reading the manual.
Mm-hmm. This is what happens when you don't put a cappuccino machine in your robots.
Yep. They could have provided some coolant. An outlet for the steam.
Goku calls down the Nimbus to catch him, just as we cut to Yamcha. The gang notice the Red Ribbon soldiers are running away? That's weird. And we cut to Commander Red's office, now empty, where his little gremlin pet walks across the now-abandoned chessboard, knocking down pieces, screeching to himself as the Red Ribbon flag pinned on the back wall starts to come loose.
So cool. Very cool shot.
It's a cool shot. It's giving me it's giving me that like Dinosaurs Kings of the World shot from the original Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Also the closed captions named this animal as quote Demon Cat.
Fitting.
As good a guess as any, I suppose.
Perhaps a relative to Scratch.
I name it Scritch.
Ooh, love that.
Because he gets little scritches behind his ears.
Goku holds the 6 and 7 star balls in his hands, his mission now complete. Goku grabs the radar, but despite his fiddling, the last Dragon Ball does not appear to be showing up. That's weird. After commercial, Yamcha finally crosses the mountain and reaches the Red Ribbon base, and despite Launch's protests, Yamcha brings the plane down into the forest surrounding the base in order to sneak up on it. But also, he lands on a road, so...
Not very sneaky. He read the manual. He knows that he's supposed to land with so much clearance between you and the nearest train.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm with you. Oolong wants to eat first before they do anything, to which Bulma threatens to cook him.
Jeez, Bulma.
A bit much. Launch wants to charge in guns a-blazin', but Roshi wants to develop a plan.
Why do these people hang out?
I have no fucking clue, team.
Because they love Goku.
Yeah. Roshi's plan is to sneak past the guards using Bulma's feminine wiles as a distraction. Yamcha says someone should scout ahead first, leading Roshi and Oolong to argue about which one of them should go first. It's like, well, you're the oldest. Well, you've got the biggest ears. Well, you've got the fewest teeth.
You're the smallest. Then later, Roshi apologizes, like, your ears really aren't that big.
this fucking Dragon Ball party is, or this Dungeons and Dragon party is broken up when Krillin spots something in the sky. They panic and scatter, but they soon realize it's Goku.
First they realize, we left the plane out. It's very obvious.
They're going to find it.
Because we put it on a road. But oh hey, it's Goku.
Oh, it's fine. He doesn't know what planes are anyway.
Thank God he had the good sense not to attack that army by himself.
Uh-huh. Goku hears the cheering of his friends below, and he goes down to say hey. Half the folks don't believe Goku ever actually made it to the Red Ribbon Army, and the other half look disappointed that he's not half dead from fighting them.
At least have some battle damage.
Yeah, jeez. Mm-hmm. You're clearly
he's not even a half shirt.
We came all this way.
Goku says that he beat everyone there, except for the ones who ran off, and Puar floats ahead to confirm this claim. Puar flies around the compound, and yeah, it's completely fucking deserted. Blanche also takes this opportunity to sneeze and revert to Launch Standard.
I love, she gets confused, and Puar just pulls up like, let's go for a walk, I'll fill you in.
I got you.
This happens regularly.
Goku explains that he climbed Korin's tower, and we get a montage flashback of that little story bit complete with a weird white vignette. Mm-hmm. We also get a flashback of a young Roshi climbing the tower, and he's got kind of like a Yamcha-ish dreamboat face.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get a... I guess we get like a montage of seasons changing hands as Roshi tries to claim the sacred water from Korin. Like, it's raining, it's snowing, and like there's snow landing on the top of the tower, all that stuff. And yeah, Roshi's just real impressed that it took Goku like next to no time compared to him.
It took me 3 years and I thought I was hot shit.
Yeah. In the dub, Poir uses this opportunity to make a pun. Saying, if Korin were in the Red Ribbon Army,
it's a so strained.
He'd be a colonel. Colonel of Korin.
Well, but she asks it first, and the gang is just like, I don't know, like, commander, I guess.
What are you talking about?
What is this? In the original Japanese, Poir instead misheard the others talking about Korin and thought they were all talking about Karinto, which is a fried Japanese snack made from flour, yeast, and brown sugar.
Ooh.
And she's just like, I love Karinto. Wait, we're not talking about... Oh, okay. Sorry.
I want some.
Yeah. If you've ever played Apollo Justice from the Ace Attorney games, Detective Emma Sky is often snacking on this fan favorite.
Oh, this looks delicious. It looks like little pretzel sausages.
Goku explains to Bulma that he needs to collect the last Dragon Ball in order to revive Upa's father, Bora. And we get more flashback. Bulma says that she may have the tools at Roshi's house to fix it. And we get even more flashback as Roshi explains that Goku crushed the Red Ribbon Army single-handedly and is about as invincible as they come, perhaps even stronger than Roshi himself.
He's the definition of invincible.
I love that we get a flashback to scenes we literally just saw, like, last episode. Yamcha decides to tag along to help Goku get that last Dragon Ball in hopes of getting strong enough to defeat him in the next World Martial Arts Tournament. And episode 68 ends with the gang all sailing off into the sunset.
Yamcha and... Roshi wasn't talking about you.
Yep.
He's having another little one of those second-in-command moments, like, oh yeah, I can do that. For sure.
I could
I'm invincible, too.
Roshi, watch, I'm invincible.
Watch me beat up this cabbage.
I'll do it.
No.
Any final thoughts on 68?
No final thoughts here.
Because according to the wiki, this is the last episode of the Red Ribbon Saga, and then the next episode begins a shorter saga, I believe called the Fortune Teller Baba Saga.
Ooh.
So let's dive right in. How about episode 69, nice, is called Who is Fortune Teller Baba?
The Japanese title roughly translates to cute, huh? Fortune Teller Baba.
Did Baba write this?
I mean, it's the like transliteration of it is like cute or nah?
Cute or nah?
Cute.
Adorable.
Cute.
I love her already. Let's meet her. We open at Kame House as the camera puts us fully up Roshi's nostrils as he trims his nose hairs.
Why? Why are you doing it way, Roshi?
For folks at home, he's taking like some full length scissors and just kind of
shoving them up in there.
Just kind of jamming them up in there and just, like, doing little snippies. I'm like, you gotta get a trimmer.
Like, this is why he gets nosebleeds all the time?
Oh, that's exactly it.
It can't be helping.
Mm-mm. Bulma says that there's nothing wrong with the Dragon Radar, so why can't it pick up that last Dragon Ball?
It can pick it up anywhere in the universe as long as it's not inside a stomach.
Yeah, she says that maybe a creature swallowed it, which would block the, like, waves from reaching the radar's view.
What?
I guess she does some very science-y explanation about, like, how the tissue, organic tissue, blocks the dragon something. So you could theoretically hide a Dragon Ball up your butt.
Oh, no.
And get it past Bulma's radar.
No.
Yeah, I feel like we have found Dragon Balls inside of big things' teeth.
We have. Yeah, they've been eaten by things
more
before.
Than once.
And also, if this was the case, you shouldn't be able to detect any Dragon Balls that are behind you.
Though I suppose by the time we've... Well, has it happened in the show already? I forget.
I don't remember.
What I'm remembering was in, like, a montage, so it probably... We're not at montage stage of Dragon Ball finding
games. Montage Dragon Balls.
It's yeah, maybe by I just then know that the firmware, she was able to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just know that they're radiant and shining hidden somewhere in a field. Luminous and blinding with your desires.
Yeah, the theme song doesn't say luminous and blinding hiding somewhere in a guy. In a guy.
Radiant and blinding hidden somewhere in Steve.
Luminous and blinding your desires you will achieve.
Ooh. Okay. Let's go. So the gang is at an impasse. If the radar won't pick up the last Dragon Ball, they are completely out of luck. However, where technology fails, we can always use magic. Roshi chimes in, while still grooming his nose hairs, that they could potentially visit fortune teller Baba. Anytime Roshi misplaces something, he always just goes to Baba to find out where it is.
What do you... You live in one house in an island, like...
That's a... that's a long trip just for that.
Listen... Sometimes I need to know where the Roku remote went.
That's fair.
Really bad.
That's fair. The ladies' aerobics is on in 5 minutes and you can't find it.
I can't find my Devo! Roshi brings out an old dusty map with illegible writing on it and points out the location of Baba's palace. Yamcha susses out the location and the gang is ready to depart. It is Yamcha, Goku, Krillin, and Puar off to visit Baba. Bulma asks for a plane capsule of her own because it is about time she went home.
I don't want to be here anymore.
I am done being on the pervert island, thank you. And the gang zoom off, wondering who this Baba is and what she's like. Meanwhile, Roshi stares off from the beach watching them go, muttering under his breath that he should have told them everything about Baba.
Left some details out, apparently.
Roshi, why?
Yeah, why?
Also, at some point, Launch reverted back to Blanche, so...
Yeah, well...
This happened off-screen. Yamcha and the gang zoop through lovely, picturesque river valleys with cool canyons and rainbow waterfalls... and we cut to a random westerny town, Frontier Village, for gas. And in the dub, we get this really cute follow-up on Goku not getting the Korin corn yeah. pub.
It's so cute, pun. It's just lodged in his little brain.
He's just, I guess I would be funnier if I didn't know him that well.
Because he's a cat. It's not corn.
How, he's not, corn's a vegetable.
I guess if I thought that he was corn, it would be funny.
And Laura's like, no, Goku, it's just the words sound the same. That's the joke. I don't get it.
In the sub, Goku is complaining because he doesn't understand that airships need to stop for gas, basically.
Goku, they're hungry.
They're hungry. They need plane food.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably my favorite scene from all these episodes. Like, just them chilling at the gas pump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because... It hits two buttons for me. Number one is I like watching anime characters have downtime.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, Goku is sitting on the plane while it's getting refueled and he's kicking his little leggies in the air while he sits on the plane in a way that I often would mm-hmm. while waiting. Goku spots some ice cream and gets up. But just then his clothes start to get rips and tears all over, worn out from all the fighting.
So he was at half shirt, but it was not the half we could see.
Oh,
it was the endurance meter. The shirt was at half shirt.
This is getting granular. How molecular does it go?
It's shirts all the way down. It's Zeno's shirt paradox.
Oh, God.
Yamcha suggests that Goku visit a tailor and get some new threads before going off to Baba. They stop at a tailor, and Goku gets stuffed into a fancy lad outfit,
I want with a more fashion bow tie montage.
And
vest.
And he is not a fan of
his
this.
His friends drag his ass.
They roast him for the clothes they probably put him
they
in.
They picked them. What's wrong with you people?
It's so good.
Oh, I like the giant hat that still fails to contain his hair.
Yes.
You can't contain the hair.
A valiant effort.
I wish they had gone through more outfits of that. I always love, it's like, you know, it's yeah, like, we let's needed... try the Hawaiian dress. Let's try the, yeah.
We needed a montage here.
We did.
Yeah.
Like the desert needs of... the rain.
And they take his glasses mm-hmm. off and he was beautiful the whole time. I mean, that's honestly, like, that's the girl movie version of taking off your weighted clothes.
Your weighted glasses.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right, Theo.
Thank you.
They are thematically equivalent.
She takes off her glasses in the movie and drops them, and they fucking crack the floor beneath.
God, I want... like, I want this now in a magical girl anime.
Was it Rock Lee with the weights?
Yeah.
Goku does not like this fit at all. It's too itchy. And he demands his old clothes back. But the tailor offers to sew Goku a new outfit using the same pattern.
This is the softest, kindest man.
I love this man.
He's very understanding.
I'm glad Tao Pai Pai didn't visit this tailor.
Yeah, he probably works with kids who have to deal with, like, sensory issues a lot.
Yeah. Goku agrees, and he would like the same symbol on the front and the back, please. I'm still repping the turtle school. Hmm? Also, this shot is weird because it almost looks like Goku's gi is a onesie.
Yeah.
As the tailor picks it up, like, the pants and the shirt are connected.
I feel like we have seen him take off one or the other before, though, right?
We have.
Yeah. Well, wait, I know we have for adult Goku, mm-hmm. but have we seen it for kid Goku?
Hasn't he dropped his pants to go fishing?
I mean, he statistically, has. He would have had to at some point, right?
I mean, like, in the footage of the show.
Yeah, he has. He's shown his little butt to wiggle his tail for fishies.
Yeah, would have happened.
Maybe it's like overalls, and it's just attached in the front.
he's got a butt flap to fish.
Yeah,
like if a butt flap had a Glasgow smile. so you could open it up all the way to stick your butt in the water.
Uh-huh.
To go fishing.
I don't know why, but it just really got me. You want to know how I got these scars? Okay.
Fishing, apparently.
It was a bad fishing accident. The tailor says that this pattern is pretty simple and should take a couple of hours to finish as he unrolls the fabric, but Yamcha promises 10 zenny extra if he can finish in just an hour. With some also, we cut away and we don't get to see him make these clothes. I really wanted to watch the tailor make these clothes.
Yeah.
What is the rush?
I don't know. Like,
you guys decided to come along with Goku.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping it would have been like that one really satisfying scene in Toy Story 2 where he like touches up the Woody doll.
Ooh, mm-hmm. That's such a good scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Koopa's dad isn't getting any deader.
No. But with some time to kill, Goku takes the Nimbus out to get Oopa. He can come with us to get the last Dragon Ball.
Yeah, give Oopa some screen time.
I know this is giving Goku too much credit, but if I didn't know future Goku, I would think that Goku is remembering being alone in the woods after his grandpa died.
And not liking it.
And thinking like, boy, I sure would have liked a friend. Now that I know what friends are.
Now that I know what those are.
I mean, maybe it is just a subconscious decision.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I could see that.
He doesn't have the words necessarily to say that, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He saw Bulma do the move of stumbling on you and taking you on an adventure, and now he has learned that move.
He stumbled upon the move of empathy.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yep. True. After commercial, we find that Goku has taken a nap on the Nimbus mid-flight. Very dangerous. And when he awakens, he arrives at Korin's tower.
The Nimbus knows the way.
Hmm. Goku calls out to Upa, who emerges shyly from his tent, and Upa, upon recognizing him, runs out to give Goku a big ol' hug.
It's aww. A beautiful, tearful reunion.
This is so sweet.
Maybe the happiest I can think of seeing Goku see someone.
Yeah, true. Goku says that there's only one Dragon Ball left to go, and he promises to bring it back and revive Upa's father. The two hop onto the Nimbus and sail away to regroup with Yamcha. Upa is worried, having never been away from home before, but Goku gives us this really cute line that, you know, sometimes new things are scary, but it gets easier.
I know. New things are scary, like leaving home for the first time or broccoli, but it gets easier.
Aw, Goku.
Good job, Goku.
Goku.
Yeah. And he's also worried that he didn't tell, Upa is also worried that he didn't tell Boro where he was going, but Goku says that he would understand, and soon he can see him in person. They regroup with everyone else, and Goku gets his new set of duds. Krillin thinks that Goku brought back a cute girl, referring to Upa, but Goku confirms, parentheses, verbally, that Upa is a guy.
Look how good he's learning!
I had to say verbally, because if I just said Goku confirms he's a guy, you might think that that was because he did the Son Goku crotch slap, but he did not.
And he even comments, he asked, like, it's getting easier to tell who's
I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. I learned a new move.
Goku decides to get changed in the middle of the street, idly scratches his crotch to the horror of his companions and the giggling of passersby.
Oh, Goku.
In the original Japanese, literally Krillin and Yamcha are yelling at him, "Stop scratching your wiener!"
Goku.
He's learning, but very slowly.
Step forward and two steps back.
Uh-huh.
He's learned consent, parentheses, for physical touch.
And that's the page he's on right
end,
now.
End of sentence.
That's the page that's dog-eared right now.
Yeah, yep. With the new uniform equipped, the gang pile into Yamcha's plane and take off. That's probably better equipment. It's probably got materia slots in it.
Ooh.
Who knows? Upa admires the technical marvels of this aeroplane, but Yamcha looks worried as the gang appear to be heading for some storm clouds. Upa says from the cockpit, "I see some black tower things that look like Korin's tower, but they're moving."
Oops.
Yamcha looks up, and we, the camera, look up to see that said tower things are, in fact, several twisters heading their way.
Very scary, very menacing.
Yes. Yamcha dodges the whirlwinds and flashing lightning as the gang emerge on the other side of the storm. And from the cockpit, Krillin spots a lake, similar to the one on the old map. They also spot a palace in the middle of said lake and go to land. It would turn out that these guys are not the only ones here, as several tough-looking fellas appear to also be at this palace.
It's pretty crowded.
Pretty crowded. Suddenly, a yokai watch-looking motherfucker in a straw conical hat appears and starts ushering the gang to form a line.
He's so cute! And his name on the wiki is just Ghost Usher.
Ghost Usher. Love that.
Or Gusher.
He's giving... Gusher. Oh, I love it.
For sure.
Gusher is giving very, like, like hostess at Rooster is like, are you five together? How many in your party? A wealthy couple ahead of them exits the fortune-telling palace, pleased with what they have learned. It was something about like misplacing a necklace in their estate.
Pearls behind the bath.
It was behind the bath.
In the dub, at least, it seems like it was a necklace for a dog.
Yeah. In the Japanese, I think it was a solid gold paperweight that they were looking for.
One of those seems more easily misplaced than the other.
True. So the tough guys in front of the gang charge in ready to fight, so the vibes are strange already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not sure. These aren't similar groups of people.
Something's up.
Somebody on seeing the big buff guys, I forget which character, says like they should call her Wrestler Baba.
Wrestler Baba.
I want to see.
Uh-huh.
You will hear no disagreement on this podcast.
So the gang charge in ahead of our gang, and we hear screams of agony from inside. Shortly after, the group limp out covered in bruises and bandages. I put my notes, this must be one of those fucked up haunted houses that make you sign a waiver.
Oh, jeez. I didn't even know those existed.
Oh, some of them did. There's one really infamous one that was really notable a couple of years ago. And I forget the name of it, and probably for the best, because it's... Ugh.
Well,
aren't good haunts, kids.
I'll just not go to any haunted houses, just to be safe.
Well... I didn't say that. I say this as a boyfriend.
If you don't want to sign a waiver, don't sign the waiver.
Exactly.
Don't like haunted houses.
That's very fair. I say this coming from a place of my boyfriend was a scare actor for a haunted house for like a number of years, and has, you know, opinions on haunted houses and haunt culture, which is the thing.
I respect that, and I think it's cool in theory. It's just not. I don't like jump scares.
That's fair.
And I don't like
it's not
fog machines, and I don't like yucky gore stuff.
I will say, when I first went into a haunted house, I found out that my immediate panic response to getting jump scared in a haunted house is not screaming or yelling or flinching or anything. I instinctively just say, get out of here.
Get out of town.
I wonder where that is on the fight / flight spectrum.
It's fight, flight, forget about it.
Can I tell you about the one time?
Why did I choose just now to take a drink?
You fucked up, sir.
I need to know better by now.
Can I real quick tell you about the one time I went to a haunted house?
Please. Oh, please,
it was
yes.
Very strange. So I went with to Land of Illusion with a bunch of college friends that came to visit my house one spring break or fall break, not spring break. There are no haunted houses in spring.
They would have to be very spooky.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to open those Easter eggs. But like, I insisted on like holding someone's hand the whole time and just kind of like kept my head down and just sort of dissociated through the whole thing. Cause I was not happy. But the one time I was not holding someone's hand, like a witch lady came up and like handed me a piece of paper with a phone number on it and was like, I get off work at I forget what time. What?
Was this a character?
Is this part of the bit?
I have no idea.
That's a lot, team.
What?
Oh, shit. Hang on. This gave. This just reminded me of another haunted house story. So, being boyfriends with a scare actor and hanging out with some of their, like, some of his haunt friends... I was friends with some of the people who were working that night, right? Mm-hmm. And I went on my own for one of the haunts. And it was one of those things where they made you wear, like, these kind of optical, like, paper optical illusion glasses things to make the, like, black light parts of the haunt pop out better and kind of mess with your sense of perception. It's kind of fun. Anyway, It was really hard to see through all, like, the black light and glow paint. There was a zombie clown in a rolling cage, who started rolling at me, and I just hear, "Is that my friend Jason?"
Oh, jeez. Oh, no.
And I just went, ah!
Not anymore, Skellington.
He's a zombie now. Your friend is gone.
Hey, he's dead now. I also put a note in that this little ghost guy has, like, the exact same face as, like, the slime from Dragon Quest.
Yes.
That's like, why I liked wall-eyed. Him so much. Yeah.
He's adorable.
Aw. I loved Dragon Quest as a young.
Gusher leads them onward, refusing to tell them anything about what is going on. And everyone is either worried or scared, except for Goku, of course. The gang enter the central chamber to find Baba, an old witch lady sitting on a crystal ball.
Our good friend Baba.
We love her. We already know who she is from Z, but this is the first time we meet her in the manga, or the anime. As sort of an antagonistic force, which is interesting, I didn't know about that before.
At least a roadblock.
A roadblock, yeah. Also, there is a through line in this sequence where Goku keeps mispronouncing Baba's full name. Like, just mishearing it.
Yeah,
like, fortune seller? Fortune smeller?
Fortune caller?
I love that she's... No, my name is ominous and mysterious.
It's spooky. It's supposed to be spooky.
I've got a ghost attendant. Aren't you scared?
Baba says that she can help find what they're looking for a measly, say 10 million zenny.
Listen, this palace bathroom isn't gonna renovate itself.
What are you doing in the bathroom that costs 10 million zenny?
Renovating it.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Putting in a jacuzzi.
Ooh. The gang does not have that kind of cashola on hand, which is now I understand why Bulma didn't come with on this on this adventure. I'm just now piecing it together.
She just smells that somebody's gonna want money.
She's like, best steer clear of that. But not to worry, as Baba has an alternate form of payment. Baba leads them onward, and the vibes are now officially rancid. Baba explains that the gang will square off one-on-one against five of Baba's warriors. If one on either side gets knocked out, another will replace them until one side has won.
Oh, so it's a Pokemon battle.
It's Pokemon. And if they win, they get a free fortune reading. Hooray!
That's to be easy enough.
Yeah.
These are the strongest people on the planet.
These are strong fight boys. Krillin and Yamcha are suddenly much more confident. Like, hey, we made it to the finals of the Tenkaichi Budokai. I'll have
Maybe
you know.
You've heard of us.
You might have heard of us. And what? The episode ends with Baba chuckling knowingly at what's to come.
Why is this an option, Baba? Like, does she just want to see a fight, but the crystal ball doesn't get pay-per-view?
That has to be it.
Yeah.
You gotta bring the action to you. And that concludes episode 69. Nice. And nice. The Red Ribbon Saga. Any final thoughts on any of the episodes today?
This is where Krillin's thirst begins.
I guess? Where he's just pining for not having a girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I guess. I mean, maybe it was latent, but when he sees what he perceives to be a Goyle his age, maybe it manifests?
Huh.
Hard to tell.
I mean, he did...
Also,
he brought the magazines for Roshi, but that's different.
That is different.
That's an offering. That's a tribute.
I mean, I'm wondering why he thought Upa was a girl to begin with.
Long hair.
Ponytail.
Is it the long hair, do you think?
Yep. That's enough.
All right, I mean...
It's enough for Krillin, anyway.
We've met people with long hair in this show that are men. Namely, Tao Pai Pai, who got us into this mess in the first place.
But has Krillin.
Good point.
Also, it's harder Krillin, to tell when
Krillin has the least amount of hair of anyone, so he knows that that makes him manly.
This is true.
Oh, I see.
And it's harder to tell with kids when they haven't, you know, gone through puberty to get other secondary sex characteristics.
Yeah.
Right. What'd you guys think about Red Ribbon? I thought there were some good parts, but a lot of it was kind of boring.
I agree.
The early bit is especially boring.
Like, I can look back on it now with, you know, rose-tinted glasses, thinking about, you know, Ader and Snow.
Yeah, Snow and Ader were probably my favorite parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the pirate part for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah, that was a part that happened.
I enjoy Tao Pai Pai.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's one of my favorite villains.
Death Eggs, good fashion.
And I wish that Commander Black got to be around for a little longer.
Yeah.
I mean, he was around for probably the longest, but he just didn't get to do anything.
Right, I wished that he got to do more.
Wouldn't it have been cool if he didn't just go immediately power mad and, like, actually got to be... Like, we got to see what Red Ribbon Army did if it was led by a capable person?
Yeah.
He would have changed it to Black Ribbon.
Oh, like, you thought it was bad before?
Imagine when we're competent. Imagine if he was funding Giroux.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, Giroux was off screen during all of this, by the way.
Yeah,
just tinkering.
And because of what we saw in these past handful of episodes, caused Giroux to want to secretly develop a plan to kill Goku via androids like 20 years in the future.
Is it just because he broke his robot?
Maybe.
Metallotron?
That might be it. Right.
It's all been vengeance for Metallotron.
Vengeance for Metallotron. Oh, also, I didn't know this, but Giroux, so do you remember the very beginning of Dragon Ball Super Heroes, the recent movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They flashed a screen on, like, a Red Ribbon computer, because the Red Ribbon Army shows up again in this movie.
Can't quite get rid of those guys.
Well, they're a really convenient force to fall back on.
Indeed.
You know what I mean?
Like, how did they reform after this? Like, was there, like, a reunion? And they were like, hey, actually, what if?
Let's get what's left of the band, like, back together.
It started with Magenta, who was Commander Red's son at some point.
Oh, yeah. I think that still fits with my little fan fiction I just wrote.
He also, fun fact, he also had a son named Jevo, according to the screen, who looks exactly like Android 16.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he had the code name of Gold.
Huh.
So maybe he
was in the army?
In the army.
Huh. That's a much more reasonable reason for vengeance.
I could see that, sure. It's gonna get weirder. Giroux had a wife named Vomi, who is Android 21 who was originally introduced as, like, a custom character in Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Huh. So, like, he made the android to model her, or she just was the android?
I think he turned his wife into an android.
Oh, yikes.
I think. Well, here's what's wild, is, like, the wife had, like, I didn't get through the plot of FighterZ because it wasn't very good, but Vomi had, like, two personalities where she would have, like, a lab coat. It's like, I'm Android 21, I'm the researcher, and her android form of Android 21 is, like, also crossed with Majin DNA, so it's like pink.
Sense.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
How did he get that?
Yeah, where's the timeline on that? Doesn't really make a lot of sense.
So many questions. Maybe I'll play through FighterZ one day.
I'm looking at you, Future Trunks. You messed up the timeline.
It's usually Future Trunks' fault. Anyway, Vomi is Vomi and Giroux are both references to throwing up.
Oh.
Which is different from the whole, like, color scheme of the Red Ribbon Saga, mm-hmm. Gero is a, like, onomatopoeia for barf.
And Vomi is.
Vomi is just vomit. Yeah.
Why?
Fantastic questions.
Why Mr. Toriyama?
Not super sure on that one.
Toriyama, are you okay?
I mean, you and I both know the answer to that. Anywho's it. Back to our story at hand. I have a poem for you guys.
Ooh.
Do you guys want to hear a poem?
I do.
Poem. Just to kind of wrap up Red Ribbon.
Tie a
I wanted
bow
to crack
on it.
Open the hyperbolic rhyme chamber. And I'll call this one Untitled. So we've come to the end of our Red Ribbon story. Let's sound off the foes in their poetic glory. First there was Silver, cunning and strong. This prince of all soldiers did not last too long. Then there was White with Murasaki in tow. Goku laid waste to their fortress of snow. Then there was Blue, as cruel as he was dashing. Met his grim end to a fatal tongue-lashing. Let's not forget Captains Doc and Yellow. Short work was made of these small-time fellows. Tao Pai Pai was next, unmatched in power, until Goku defeated him at the base of the tower. Last but not least was cruel General Red, whose blind ambitions left a hole in his head. Leaving Black in the end, who just couldn't hack it, after Goku punched clean through his full metal jacket. So that ties it up. And from what I've seen, the only real winner was Violet, my queen.
Yes!
Thank you.
I also have an itty-bitty poem.
Yeah.
It is nowhere near the masterpiece that you just said. It is.
I mean, you write actual poems, though, that are.
this is a. Thank you. This is just a little haiku for Commander Black. Second in command, always reigning in your mess. Bang! Enough of you.
Ooh. And before we finally close the Red Ribbon chapter of this, of our story, how about we pay one last visit to the horoscope section?
Yes.
Please.
Yep. Y'all ready for a 4-star reading?
Yes, yeah. Please.
We are reading for the best character in all of Dragon Ball. That's right, it's Colonel Violet.
Yeah!
With a birthday of September 23rd, 1986, making her the correct sign, which is to say, a Libra.
Yes. Very good. Good and correct.
So, Violet, this is what the stars have to say about you this week. You're looking gorgeous today, and have likely noticed the admiring glances you've received.
Through the fourth
Your
wall.
Your passion is running high, and you may be able to spend this evening with a special someone.
Ooh.
Fulfill your romantic fantasies. Light candles, use your best china, and dress with sensuality in mind. Your partner will appreciate the effort. You're bound to have a wonderful evening.
I mean, we don't know where she's going after this.
That's true. She's gonna spend all that money on a sweet date night with her girlfriend, Captain Chartreuse.
Nice.
Yeah,
it.
Briefly I was going to say, like, it's a shame that she never joined Bad Chicks for Good, but more than I think about it, I'm glad that she just ended up retiring.
Yeah, good for her.
With her money.
Yeah, you know, maybe she actually, like, you know, funds them with, like, loans here and there.
Yeah, she bought stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about this last episode because we didn't know who Violet was when we were building Bad Chicks for Good LLC, and we determined that she is the shadow broker behind them. She's the money behind the figurehead. Which I think that works for her and for us. Thank you all for tuning in, and I appreciate all y'all tuning in every week. Not every week, every other week. What am I, piecemeal? And make sure to tune in next time for a Monster Mash! I was working on the podcast late one night
when my ears did hear an eerie sight.
Someone left the air conditioning on and it showed up on their waveform. It was me, fuck. Until then, hey Theo.
Hey.
Whereabouts can we find you on the internet, if in fact you wish to be found?
I do not wish to be found on the internet. But if you happen to be in or around Dayton, Ohio, you can come to the Black Box Improv Theater. We have shows every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I perform Thursdays and Fridays, and probably when you hear this, I'll be back at Wednesdays too.
Nice. And Tyler?
You can listen to the aforementioned Piecemeal, which is our other anime-themed show that we do together, where we are reading every volume of the famously ongoing manga One Piece. And we are
that manga.
And we are fast running out of it. Somehow.
I'm coming for you. You can find me, whenever I do feel like streaming, on twitch.tv/jaycalves, JAYCALVES. Usually I'm on in the middle of the week, towards the evening if I got the time, but if you hit the follow bell, then you'll just know whenever I'm live. And also, jaycalves takes you to various socials media that I don't actually update. If you're feeling generous, we would love it if you could give this a rating and review on your podcast service of choice. And I forgot the part of the call-out where you email us.
Oh.
I said things out of order. I'm so sorry. You can email us, obviously, at destructodiscourse@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at destructo_disc. More importantly, you can go to the top pinned tweet, and there will be an invite to our Discord page where you can come hang out. It is the Destructo Discourse Discourse Discord. And we are happy to have you. No, back to that rating and review on your podcast service of choice. Don't you think I forgot about that? If you could, we would love it if you could leave a rating and a review, but specifically a 4-star rating, if you please.
Please.
4?
Yes, 4. 4. It's for the Dragon Ball, the Gohan Ball.
Grandpa.
Gohan?
Yeah, give us the Grandpa. You know, we've done that whole bit for like 3 years.
A name I haven't heard in a dog's age.
It's been 87 years.
I wonder how that guy's doing.
Tyler, I know that voice you're using. That's the X mark voice.
What voice am I using, Theo?
That's the I know something you don't
know
that's voice.
That's the I'm casually dropping hints. Oh no, how clumsy of me voice.
Oh no, my hints. Fuck.
My hints are spilling like marbles.
My hints, no!
Oh, no, I'm slipping on all of these hints!
This has been Destructo Discourse, and we've got some training to do.
Nice.
Nice.
Cause 69.
Yeah.